Hello, this is your old pal, the Moo Cow, and we're here at Indie Film Cafe, and I am here with...
Just Jen.
And, of course, Continuity Monkey.
Of course.
We are minus our old pal, Jonathan. He had something of a family emergency, and he's not with us this time around. Well, of course, what we really want to hide the fact that one of Continuity Monkey's bookies was looking for him to pay back one of his bets, found Jonathan and actually beat the heck out of him, and he's in the hospital. But, you know, that's
he's okay. Here in spirit.
He's here in spirit. So, anyway, so we decided that this was probably a good time to go ahead and go back to our first episode, which is Prehistoric Bimbos in Armageddon City.
Oh.
Yeah, you heard that nice groan. Because Just Jen had not seen it. It was our very first episode. Jonathan and I only kind of did like a half hour on it, and I always kind of thought that we could have talked a little bit more. So we figured this would be a good opportunity to get Jen so that she could see it and share her thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you.
So we'll go ahead and listen to a little bit of mood music and then get right into it. So, Prehistoric Bimbos in Armageddon City. As we mentioned before, this is a Todd Sheets movie. This is an early Todd Sheets movie. This is one that he's not particularly proud of. I think we brought this up in the previous podcast.
I can see why.
Yeah, it's like I said, nobody walks out into your first film being Stanley Kubrick. You have to take steps and you have to learn along the way. And this was one of those learning steps because, Todd Sheets is making better movies now. Got better production values. He's got better...
better music?
Better music. Better acting. Better everything. He knows how to frame shots. So he knows how to do everything better now. And all of these movies that he's doing now, Dream of Purple Neon and Bone Hill Road and some of the other things, the part where he was doing in Grindsploitation, these things are all looking like real professional movies and they look good, Now, I have to say, I'm less of a fan of those kind of movies because I just love the absurdity and ridiculousness of some of the early Todd Sheets film because they, to me, they have a level of fun that you're just not going to get in some of the other films. So that's why we're choosing to do this movie as opposed... Well, okay, me. Chose to do this particular movie as opposed to some of the latter ones, which are a little more violent. And, he's known as the King of Splatter for a reason. There's really no splatter in this film whatsoever. There's really no violence in this film whatsoever.
Some gentle poking, a shove match.
Right. Push, push, shove, shove. Mm-hmm. Poke, poke, poke.
And then they won.
So, yeah, this is a little bit different. And, so we decided this was a lot more of a fun movie. So I guess we could go over sort of what happens.
Okay.
The movie starts off with, I guess, the first 20 minutes of the very first movie in the Bimbo series called Bimbos BC, which was shot in 1990 with pretty much the same group of folks, either in Kansas City or close to Kansas City, because I think that's where he was based originally. And there are a lot of his friends and folks that he shot a lot of his early movies with.
It's very confusing.
Oh, yes.
I had no idea what was happening.
Right. You're just kind of thrown into this, and there's no real warning about that.
No.
And if you didn't know that the first 20 minutes is based on an earlier movie...
Even with knowing that, there's the scene where the girl goes into the forest, and something appears behind her, and then she's in the middle of a field.
Right.
And then... I guess something happens. I don't know.
Something happened.
I was very lost. By the end of the movie, I was okay with that, really.
Okay. But... Well, yeah, it's sort of the prelude to what's going to come. But yeah, so the first 20 minutes kind of, it's setting the plate for what's to follow. And as a matter of fact, it's funny because, okay, we have Bimbos BC, and then we have Prehistoric Bimbos in Armageddon City, which we're watching. But there is a third Bimbos movie. There is a third one called Bimbos in Time, which either it's not been released or it's unavailable. I've never seen footage of it. I've only heard folks who are in the biz and or like me who are obsessed over certain films talk about it. And apparently, Salacious Thatch is in there again, who's the villain. He's the same villain in all three movies. And he activates some kind of a nuclear reactor, and it causes a sort of portal, a time portal, and the bimbos go sort of back in time, and they meet historical characters like Jack the Ripper and King Arthur and I think some Wild Western gunfighters. And I know that it was enough that he got a licensed comic book written based on bimbos in time. So it's out there somewhere, and I'm dying to see it.
Yeah, you sound like you really would like to add that movie to your collection.
God, yes. And I think I mentioned or with Jonathan in the previous podcast, I was like, Todd, please someday release all three bimbos on Blu-ray with commentary. I would so love to have that artifact, that treasure. And it's not just me. There's a lot of folks out there who like this film in spite of every issue and problem, of which there's many, and it's kind of a long laundry list to go through, so I don't really kind of want to dwell on that so much. But anyway, getting back to the plot, so first 20 minutes is the setup. We have the bimbos who have survived this post nuclear war, we think.
That's what they tells us.
Yeah. It's not very convincing because there's electricity and cars and trains and so forth. So it's kind of a nice post-apocalyptic world. and then the bimbos are there. And at least in the first movie, there's an issue because one of their leaders gets captured or sick. And they have to go and find some kind of a treatment or some kind of a thing to counteract the virus, whatever that is. And so they go back there, and then they run into Thatch, and Thatch is evil and just does awful things. And then there's a big fight, air quotes, and the bimbos escape. And that it's funny because at that point, Pringle, who is actually played by the director, Todd Sheets, the guy with the very long lion's mane mohawk.
Mullet,
and the cape that's in tatters.
The shredded cape.
He's a villain. Okay. And he's helping Salacious Thatch, and somewhere along the line, he kind of flips over, and you never quite see that.
No explanation. Later on in the movie, all of a sudden, he's on the bimbo side.
Right. Well, okay. They're kind of cute, so I guess I understand that.
It's the fur.
They're wearing fur because in random places. They need it in this post-apocalyptic winter wonderland, of which you never see any snow or anything like that.
No. While we're in short shorts and, you know, random fur.
Right. Well, it's one of the things the bimbos do.
And nicely styled hair.
Yes, very. Lots of hairspray. You can smell it from here.
Yep.
So anyway, the movie to come involves them. Originally, I guess they need to go to the trade expo and get some precious gems to trade for food?
No, they have to go get precious gems to trade at the trade expo for food,
right.
But they're going to go on a hike through the forest to find these precious gems.
As you do.
After they have a whiny match over none of the other girls liking her. And
it's not fair.
It's not fair.
Yeah, so the bimbos are, at least the one is pretty whiny. Yeah,
the leader.
Gabriel. But anyway, so in the meantime, while they are doing this, there's a new evil guy in town, and he has brought his robots with him, and he is Nemesis, and he is the law, and he's running everything, and he wants to take over. He knows the bimbos are a problem, and therefore he's able to use the resurrected Salacious Thatch, who lost a hand or an arm and has a new metal, or at least looks like a piece of metal. I think it's actually a bit of plastic, to assist him. And they're going to take over Armageddon City. I don't even know why at this point. I guess they want to just add more Jiffy Pop women in the background. It's a very strange scene among many strange scenes. Yeah. So, yeah, so the bimbos, of course, are going to stop them because they fight for what's right. That's what they do. They're bimbos. All sorts of hijinks ensue. They get captured, but they figure their way out. They sort of are made to sort of half-heartedly mine this wall. They sort of lightly tap.
Oh, yeah.
And they manage to escape. And at that point, Nemesis and Salacious Thatch have a falling out. And there's this very, very long, protracted fight slash chase scene involving vehicles of different kinds.
Starts off with cars, and then we find bicycles mm-hmm. complete with baskets and flowers.
That come and go. Continuity error.
Oh, yeah. And then skateboards. And then a shoving match.
Right. And of course, it's not just those two. One of the guys, the little guy with the mustache, decided he was going to program one of the robots to find them as a quote-unquote referee and blow them all up. So the two of them and plus this third robot is chasing them, and they're all doing the same thing. They're all in cars, and then they're all on skateboards, and they're all et cetera. And they blow up. And meanwhile, Yankee Doodle Dandy is playing in the background.
We're going to have a whole section on music, right?
Yeah, we are. We're going to talk production stuff next.
Oh, you forgot a part of, a very important part of the plot.
Okay.
For the chase scene, they win.
That's right, they did. They win.
We don't know what they won or how. Did they just stop and jump, literally jump and said,
"Yay!
We won!" Okay.
And I love it because Gabrielle's like, "You're all great warriors." It's like, no, you're not. You're all terrible.
Didn't do anything, but they won.
But they won.
That's the most important thing.
There you go. So that was heartening, to say the least. That's it. That's kind of the plot.
Yeah.
There are some little itty-bitty things on the side, which don't really matter, so we won't get into too many details for that. I do want to sort of mention a little bit some of the folks who are involved in it. Like I said, most of these folks are friends and actors, or friends who are being actors for Todd Sheets and his early work. So a number of these folks you're going to see in a lot of his movies. I don't remember the little guy with the mustache. He's definitely in a lot of his movies. But Tonya Monahan, she's the one who's playing Trina. She's mostly in the first film, but she also appears in the second. Holly Starr is Gabrielle. She's kind of the whiny one who's, nobody likes me. No one's following
Trina
me.
Trina left me in charge, but no one wants to follow me.
I can't find my sparkly lipstick.
Goodness. Yep.
Then there's Jenny Admire. She also plays one of the bimbos. Veronica Orr plays the doc. She also has a second role, I guess you noticed, where she plays the feisty black girl in the black suit who slaps the hell out of all the other bad guys later
on. The best fighter of the group.
The best fighter of the group. The best fighter of the whole film. You kind of wish her character had been there all along.
Yeah. She was a bit of a badass at the end. I liked her.
Absolutely. Stephanie Malone plays Sapphire, who's just kind of there. Cheryl Metz plays Kyrie. I honestly don't remember who that was. Stacey Smith plays Melissa. And then there's a few other folks in there. And then, of course, there is Matthew Lewis, who plays Larry the Male Bimbo.
Is that his official title?
That's his official title.
All right.
He's the one. They live in caves.
Okay. When they're talking about the insect people that you see for half a second, with no explanation.
And one of them looked like some kind of overstuffed snuffle up against / woolly elephant.
But you have to admit, that was the best costuming.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. And okay, before we get to costuming, I just want to dwell a little bit more on the acting.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's not very good. I'm just going to say it. It's not very good.
No.
It's ham-handed. They are amateurs. I mean, that's what this is. So you can't hold them to the same standards that professionals do. But, you know, in some instances, they could have tried a little harder.
Yeah.
Or, you know, perhaps there could have been more takes where they were a little bit more believable. I mean, some of the fight scenes were just not very well done.
some of them.
Okay, all of them.
All right.
When they're attacking the insect people, like you mentioned.
Oh.
And it's just sort of half-heartedly poke, 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 poke.
Yeah, and the camera angle is supposed to be from the insect's point of view, and it looks even worse.
The pokey's point
of view. Yeah, yeah.
I know.
Well, you almost feel sorry for him. It's like, just leave him alone. He wants to take a nap. You're poking him like an annoying little sister.
A dirt nap. So, yeah. So some of the acting is not very good.
Well, Larry, the male bimbo, doesn't know how to use a sword.
No, I'm not sure any of them do. But nope. I think that at the time, they're probably just trying to sort of not injure themselves or anybody else. I think that was probably the number one concern. Mm. But, you know, again, this goes back to the whole feel of like, we've got a camera, let's go out and have fun and make this movie in a backyard with my friends. I mean, that's really what this comes down to. And usually this is the sort of thing that you're not going to see released. But
only if you know one of the actors who got it as a gift.
Right, right.
And you've had a few drinks.
Right, oh yeah. There's got
there's many drinking games you can play with this as well. We didn't mention that.
There's definitely some alcohol that should be paired with this. but yeah, so at some point these were released on Pendulum, and so now they're sort of fair game. And like I said, Todd himself knows and understands that this kind of a movie is going to get some ridicule. But you know, it's good nature. Like I said, you have to start somewhere. Nobody starts off as Stanley Kubrick, so this is just a rung on his professional ladder that he clearly has learned from. So that's a good thing. So I guess we could talk a little bit about the technical aspects. where okay. to begin? Let's start with music.
Okay.
So there's an awful lot of free public domain music.
It's like they just got a bunch of public domain music, threw it in a bag, kind of shook it up, and just reached in one at a time and just placed it end to end.
Right, right. So let's see if we can remember some of the cuts. One of them is Holst's Mars, the Bringer of War.
Mm-hmm.
That gets used an awful lot.
Yeah. Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle Dandy. Oh,
ooh,
my God.
Twice.
I don't think I can ever hear that song again without thinking of this film.
And you know what's kind of sad? Good? I don't know. Pick which word you want to use. Does it actually fit in with the silliness of the chase scene?
It really does. It really, really does. And that was a point I was going to make later on, but it's okay. Cool. Make it now. Like I said, it elevates the scene to sort of the level of French absurdities. That's kind of what it reminds me of. It's one of those weird early 20th century French absurd films. And it's great. I mean, it's hysterical. It's nothing you're going to see anywhere else. We have those songs, and then Hall of the Fire.
Yeah, Hall of the Fire King, I think.
Hall of the Fire King. Mm-hmm. That's in there.
There were several of them that I recognize. I just don't know the name. Mm-hmm. Everyone's heard them.
Right, right. But there is, of course, the very haunting Bimbo's theme that is Todd Sheets' band, Inaki and Key, does. Remember that rocker?
Yes. Yes. Haunts all my nightmares.
Sort of explaining, sort of acting as exposition, talking about the bimbos and what they're going to do. And
yes, through the very long credits in the beginning.
Yes, yes, yes. Got to pad the film out.
Oof.
So, yeah, so actually, God, when you think about the long beginning sequence with the credits, and then the 20 minutes of the previous film, and then the long closure, there's probably really about 35 minutes to 40 at the most of
material. And then if you take out those four different shots that they use many, many times, it's one of the drinking games.
So that's also part of the production values. Yes, there are a number of shots, usually panning up to see.
No,
or
there's not a number of them. There's four of them.
Usually panning up or away from buildings.
Yes.
And then there's the infamous fly shot where you're looking at what looks to be like a stone cathedral somewhere in Chicago, I think. And you're just kind of sitting there. And meanwhile, a fly buzzes in.
Mm-hmm.
You see that at least four or five times.
Yep. Then you see shots of this devastated city several times. Doesn't look devastated.
Cars driving in the background.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. There's one point where
da-da-da! Yep,
there you go. Drink.
Yep.
It was at one point Todd Sheets is acting as his character Pringle, and he's looking for the bimbos, and they're in. I'm in this cavern someplace. Well, no, you're in an underground parking garage.
With cars.
With a car. So there's a certain level of pretend going on, and, you know, you just kind of have to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it works. The movie has its own sort of little twisted logic that it's better off not fighting. You just kind of go with it, and you'll have fun. So next we have costumes. So we mentioned the insectoids. We mentioned the odd elephant woolly carpet thing with the big feet. There's a sort of collection of these odd robots that are actually kind of fun. They really look like somebody kind of sat down in a craft room and just took, like, you know, boxes and spray painted them silver and bits and pieces of other things and some like plastic accordion extenders and just made a bunch of shit.
Yeah, and they're not too bad for being, you know, as amateurish as this movie is. They really aren't.
They're not.
Except
they're creative.
For the, I don't know if you want to call them boots, shoes, legs, feet, whatever, on the walking robot.
Yeah.
It's so big and clunky that it was unnecessary. But the rest of it wasn't bad.
I think that was an instance where they either silver duct taped his shoes or they spray painted the shoes with silver.
No, different guy.
Oh, which one?
The
are you
one
about?
That we just saw on the TV that no one can
see. Oh, okay.
The one that guards them when they're mining.
Gotcha.
Has a like these huge, like everyone can see my hands demonstrating silver blocks.
Right. He's
around
been
feet.
He's been hitting the calf master. He's got this big giant metal calves.
And it makes it very clunky. Well, you can have a clunky robot without this poor guy in the robot seat trying to struggle with these wooden planters.
I know. I kind of felt bad. Somebody earned their salt on this production by playing in these robots. But they're actually pretty creative. I mean, that's pretty neat. I enjoy the robot costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they add to a level of ridiculousness, but they're kind of fun, too. I kind of wish I had a suit like that.
Well, one of the good things with the movie is they didn't do any close-ups of the robot, so you can't see really how ridiculous it is.
Right, well,
It's far enough away, and the movie quality is bad enough that doesn't stand out.
Right, we should have mentioned earlier, this is a shot on video. So this is video on, you know, at its best. There is no film involved in this, and it's certainly nothing digital. And, you know, 1991, if you had a camcorder, this is what you did if you were going to make a movie. So that's perfectly understandable. With regards to the robots, most of the time you're seeing them in bad lighting anyway, so the details are going to kind of wash out, which is probably a good thing. But, you know, some of them, too, they're just like random bits of cords and stuff. And that just kind of makes it look cool. It almost rises to the level of early Doctor Who, to be perfectly honest. Some of those costumes are kind of in that same league. But it's funny because, you know, Nemesis has a World War I German cross.
I noticed that. Yep.
And a motorcycle helmet.
And, of course, he has the eye patch.
And he has the eye patch.
You have to.
Sometimes I think it's a bit of aluminum foil. Oh, there's Jiffy Pop Woman. It's just very odd.
I think she's supposed to be tortured.
Oh, yeah. She's supposed to be being electrocuted, I guess. But she's got one of those silver emergency blankets wrapped around her. She looks like
she's in a cage.
Yeah. She looks like she's in a pan of Jiffy Pop getting popped.
And she shakes.
It's that's the first thing I thought of, and it's just amazing.
Okay, costumes.
Yeah. So then there's the bimbos.
Yeah.
Which again, short shorts.
Of course.
T-shirts and bits of fur randomly sewed on.
Yeah. Some of the shorts or the shirts are a little torn because in the future all the clothing is torn. Of course.
Of course.
One girl has a fur bra because...
Of course.
Exactly. Yep. All have jewelry, nice feathered hair, good makeup, watches.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's temporally, it's a little confusing. It's hard to tell. I guess it's supposed to be the future, but there's a lot of like prehistoric stuff there. I don't know. I don't quite understand. I guess it's supposed to be like a Mad Max sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Where they've lost all of modern conveniences.
Except for phones, electricity, cars, exactly. Trains.
That's okay, the weird part. So it's like they don't really need to wear furs and poke around with random sticks.
But that seems, with future, thank you, with future, with movies set in the future, it's either silver, shiny, you know, clothing or furs.
Right.
Okay.
And it's a very standard 80s trope. You probably haven't seen a lot of the sort of fantasy movies. That, I mean, maybe through
I saw
Misty,
a few. Yeah.
You know, Ator and such. But you've got this really weird mismatch sometimes where they are playing these barbarians with swords, but they also have laser guns and spaceships, and it's just like a weird mishmash.
Yes.
So that, I think, is kind of what it's going for, but it's not really very believable because there's too much, like, regular life from today out there, clearly, obviously.
Well, you have to talk about Hubcap Wizard.
Oh, yeah. So we've talked about Nemesis. So Salacious Thatch has his own interesting costume.
Oh.
It's a cape with a hubcap, a plastic one, and his little plastic claw. And he's got all this eyeshadow on. And I think he's
stringy long hair.
Yeah.
And he has leather bracelet. And oof.
Yeah, he's got quite the collection of stuff. And he kind of runs in a very odd, sort of over-exaggerated way. they all have this very strange.
Nobody
knows how to run like a human being.
No. I guess their instruction for running is stick your arms kind of off to the side and run, waving your arms.
Flailing around.
Flailing. Oh, it's so bad.
It's very strange. I'm not sure if that's supposed to add to the humor or if that's just to add to the weird dreamlike quality of the film.
Well, it could be run, but you can't run too fast because we have this little camcorder.
Right. It adds to the level of the cartoonishness of the film.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then there's Mustache Guy.
Oh, we forgot to mention him with the characters.
Yeah. So he's out there. I guess he's a farmer with robots.
That are mining in some mine somewhere in this nice rolling field.
Right. And unfortunately for him, not Salacious Thatch, but Nemesis has stolen them and I guess used them as part of his robot army. And he's rather sad about that. He doesn't really emote very well.
No.
But he's funny. He's like, I'll stay here and guard the camp. What camp?
Mm-hmm.
And B, he doesn't do anything but lay down and put a newspaper over his face.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of a big bag of nothing, pretty much.
He shows up at the end. Save the day?
No, he's the guy that programs the other robot to finally go and put an end to the misery by blowing up the other two.
Well, but not really the end, because you have to get, you know, prepared for the sequel.
I know. We didn't want to spoil it for everybody else. But his nagging shrew of a wife pops in.
Yeah, where did she come from?
We can say that about half the characters. Where do these people come from?
Yeah.
There's this other guy with kind of a strange overbite and weird hair who's like, down from the mountains of the perilous, blah, blah, blah. And she's just like going on and on until finally Doc says, shut up, go away. Mm-hmm. And then Pringle picks him up and drags him off.
Yeah, because they're supposed to show up in the sequel.
I think they are part of that famous missing 11 minutes. Remember,
I
don't know if I mentioned this here. This is the 69-minute version that we watched because that's the only one I have.
Aww.
There is an 80-minute version out there. And I'm dying to get my hooves on it because I'm sure it's going to explain some of these characters that sort of pop in or out.
I think your hopes are just set a little too high.
Or not. It may be extra footage of those guys chasing each other again.
Oh, God, not more chasing.
You know, it's hard to tell, but I'm dying to find out. Mm-hmm. I think it would be marvelous.
Oh.
And that is why I would love to see all three movies released on Blu-ray with commentary. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see if there's any way that Todd Sheets could ring up some of his old buddies that were in these movies and just sort of give us their idea. How fascinating it would have been to listen to them talk about the making of this movie and, mm-hmm. you know, what the direction was like or what they thought the movie was going to be like or how did they like acting in these furs behind the back door of Macy's.
Yeah, that's where they go upstairs, walk across, and then go downstairs.
It was a very important action scene.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we kind of talked about the quote-unquote stunts.
Oh, yeah, that's true. The stunts. Ooh. Yeah, there's really no way to sugarcoat this. They're not believable.
No.
They're really not.
No. I like the one scene where you can almost see the bimbos. Oh, who did they surround? One of the guys. And it's almost like they had numbers and they're waiting for their number to be called right. to come and gently push against him and wave their spear weapon of choice.
That was Nemesis.
In the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were fighting Nemesis.
Yeah, they were being called one at a time.
Right.
And they waited very patiently.
They waited on their marks. Yes. They got their
moms
cues.
Would be proud.
And then it's funny because they end up knocking him down and they're going to start poking him, which you know is the end.
Yep.
When all of a sudden he gets saved at the last second because Salacious Thatch comes in and he's like, stop what you're doing. Rah, rah, rah. And one of the girls conveniently runs right in his arms so that she could be captured on cue, which is the device they needed to make them all get captured.
Oh, yes. Yes. Ran to his arms like a lover.
Without a weapon, even.
Yeah.
I guess she was the impetuous bimbo who didn't really think about her actions. And
that or she's secretly a spy for the other side.
That could be. And don't forget, there is the mini bimbo. There's the little, like, 12-year-old bimbo. The one who, I guess, it's funny, when she starts talking about how her village was destroyed and the music changes. So
the kids were captured.
Yes,
and
tortured.
Aww.
And they're all dead except her.
Aww.
And she contributes to the fighting, sort of. I know she kind of half-heartedly slaps at people. And then she sort of kicks somebody in the shins a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is kind of funny.
And I apologize. You were saying about the music. What is the name of that song that plays? There's like two quote-unquote sad parts, and they play the same
Oh, yeah, I
tune.
Think it's from like a Swan Lake or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's...
I'm going to have to look that up. This is going to annoy the crap out of
me. It's more public domain goodness.
Oh.
And, you know, I mean, that's what you do when, you know, you're a young filmmaker and you don't have the money to even get a band to record stuff for you. Or, I mean, they had his band do the one song, but I can understand not wanting to have all the music coming from this sort of rock and roll band.
Rock and roll?
Yeah, I know. It goes through the motions. So, yeah, so if you can supplement it with cheap and or free stuff that you can get anywhere, yeah, that's great. So it just kind of went a little much.
Mm, like the chase scene.
Like the chase. Oh, my God. But that was brilliant in the chase scene.
It went too long. I
you
thought,
think?
Just a little bit. I like how they spotted the wall a mile away and continued to go to it and
straight
act surprised when they gently bumped into it and fell over.
Yeah, and then they couldn't figure a way to sort of escape from it either. They just kind of waited until the other robot came to finish them off.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I felt... It could have been really funny, and there were parts of it. And those two characters were goofy enough, especially with the Yankee Doodle song in the background, that it could have been really funny. It just went on way too long.
Salacious Thatch.
Way too long.
Danced. Or no, sorry, Nemesis danced an awful, awful lot. He likes waving his butt around.
Oh, yeah, he did quite the butt dance.
Quite the butt dance. And I understand that he was sort of taunting Salacious Thatch. But we could have done with a little less of that.
Well, they danced together earlier
they
when
did.
They decided to join forces.
They did.
But we never explained why they're fighting.
Well, I guess there's that one scene where Nemesis is thinking to himself out loud so that we can understand his motivation, of course.
Yeah.
gosh, he basically regrets pairing himself up with mm-hmm. Salacious Thatch because he's decided he's becoming nothing but his gopher. And he thinks that Thatch has had his chance, quote unquote, to rule Armageddon City. There's an awful lot of this rule Armageddon City thing, which it's very theoretical at best.
Yeah, considering they have no army, no group, no followers.
No say over anything.
No, nothing.
They have one little cave that they turn people into Jiffy Pop. That's what they've got. And they got a couple of
faculty parking spots.
And they got a couple of robots, a couple of poorly made robots. That's it. That's mm-hmm. all they've got. Although Salacious Thatch was able to find a working 1990s telephone and was able to call up Doc.
Well, yeah, somehow through her satellite, he was able to call her by dialing the correct phone number.
Which he knew, which was nice. Yeah. Very convenient.
Yep.
I mean, if you're going to do that, you might as well call for pizza while you're at it.
I was disappointed it wasn't one of those clear phones.
Yes, that would have been very, very 90s.
That would have fit in perfectly, actually.
Might not have fit the budget, though. I think you had to kind of go with what they had.
Mm-hmm.
Props. So, okay, so there's an interesting collection of hardware that's available to the bimbos and the fighters. I mean, there is a couple of swords. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them I'm pretty sure are metal. Others I'm not really sure of.
I think there's a club.
There's a club.
With maybe a fancy chain on it for decoration.
And Pringle, which is to say Todd Sheets, has a pair of scythes that he likes to play around with.
Those are definitely plastic.
Probably.
Definitely.
I know one of the insectoids fights with a broom. It's just a broom. It's a straw broom. It's like, you know, even to make that effective, you could take the brush part off and, oh, it's just so bizarre.
Mm-hmm. Lots of sticks.
Lots of sticks because you have to poke.
Yes.
So lots of poking, lots of sticks.
One of the bad guys, I guess, he's supposed to be a robot. It looks like a half mummy type mm-hmm. thing on his, well, at least his face, has a saw.
Right. The
table saw. Not on. He's just sort of gently waving it in the bimbo's direction.
And because it's not on or functional at all, it really is more of an obstacle than a weapon.
Yeah.
So it's very.
Now, it could have been thrown.
Ineffective.
That would have worked.
Could have been thrown. That would have actually hurt somebody.
Yep.
So we don't want that. But I almost was looking for, like, the extension cord to sort of plug in to some player so it would actually turn on, but wasn't going to work.
No.
So, yeah, props were kind of an issue. There wasn't a lot of money spent on that. There is an alien creature. Well, there's several alien creatures. We got into costumes. But apart from the costumes, Pringle runs into one in his, quote-unquote, underground cavern, which is really a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the humorous bits of the film, which I know I had to explain to you because
I was very grateful to point out that was supposed to be humorous.
It's confusing.
It wasn't very funny.
It's supposed to be the alien because I guess Alien was the movie at the time.
Yeah,
and it's actually, I mean, it's dripping this sort of green, almost phosphorescent slime, so it looks kind of interesting, kind of cool.
It almost looks like they got an alien puppet.
Yeah,
and they just showed part of it.
Right.
And then he made
probably out of the budget.
And then he made some joke, add quotes, lots of quotes around that, about it being the wrong movie.
Right. And we, Jonathan and I discussed that a lot about the breaking of the fourth wall. This happens an awful lot in a film, in this film. Generally speaking, that's a big no-no. You can maybe get away with it once in a film. The effect of which is just very strange because it just underlines the artifice of the film itself. So you generally don't want to do that, even for comic effect, except maybe once. But it's happened so often in this film, it's just sort of groan-inducing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I heard you groan several times.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't used for any good effect.
No.
It served no purpose.
No.
Because a lot of the things that were said, like that dumb comment, he was talking to himself the entire time, could have been said to himself.
Right.
One of the other moments is Doc, when the dumb black guy.
John Apollo.
Is that it? Okay. Okay. When he goes running, again, we're going to use quotation.
To save the bimbo. Ooh,
yes, with his arms flailing. She looks at the camera and says, oh, not again. You didn't have to say that. You were surrounded by bimbos.
Right.
You could have said it to them.
Right.
They would have gotten it.
So we would have gotten it.
Yeah, it didn't serve any purpose. Right. Now announcing that was, you know, wait for the sequel or something like that. Maybe not in the beginning, but at the end, use it once. Okay. Yeah. I gotcha. Ha ha.
That was used three or four times.
Yeah.
But again, this is something that you learn as a filmmaker, mm-hmm. and that's generally not done in his later movies, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Lesson learned.
Okay.
But there's another one, too, remember, again, involving Pringle, where he finds the clacker, the movie clacker, which is used from the old days to announce when the scene was ending and beginning.
Oh, it's
still used, I think.
It is.
But... yeah, so he's like, oh, I'm on their trail. I know I found them because here's their clacker.
That was even worse than the alien one. I'm glad you reminded me that was humor. I didn't realize it.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
That was so bad.
But it's very interesting. Again, this is not the sort of thing that usually happens in a Todd Sheets film. He's not really interested in humor for most of his films.
Mm-hmm.
He's more interested in, you know... visual guttural horror of violence and gore. That's kind of what he's going through in most of his films.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to try and inject this humor is very, very different for him. And, you know, humor is very difficult to pull off.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something that you might think is funny or that I might think is funny isn't necessarily funny to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And... that's
saying I have an awesome sense of humor.
You do. Absolutely. But
when I know what you mean.
Right. When you're making something for mass consumption, you kinda wanna sort of float this by as many people as you can to see if it works or not.
Oh yeah. And well there's plenty of movies. Everyone has their favorite movie they think is absolutely hysterical, and you show it to your friend and they're like, that's funny. Okay. Well, I guess it was. Yeah. Or they show you theirs, and you're like, I don't get it. Okay.
It's true.
Everyone has those. I have some of my favorite movies that I think are absolutely hysterical, and I love them. And, yeah, my friends and family won't watch them.
Believe me, that's two-thirds of my collection.
Oh, I believe it. I've seen some of your movies. I totally believe it.
But you hadn't seen a movie like this, had you?
No. None of my friends in high school made movies. That's what this really reminded me of. And honestly, if you had said that this was a group of high school kids that made this movie, I would have felt, I don't want to say better about it, I would have appreciated it more, probably, because it looks like something that a group of high school kids, and it's not bad if you look at it that way.
Right.
But the adults, maybe not so much.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, Todd Sheets is one of those guys, like many of us, who are bitten by the movie bug. We want to be able to tell stories. We want to be able to make movies. We don't have money. Nobody has millions of dollars that they can just do this. You know, I mean, of course, okay, maybe Tommy Wiseau is able to mysteriously come up with money and fund the room. But most of the people don't have that opportunity. So you do what you can with what you've got.
Yeah.
And that's where independent film comes from. And it's actually a great thing because you've seen a lot of the stuff that Hollywood does. They're very conservative, really, when you look at it. They don't take chances anymore. They don't really go after anything new or interesting because it's a risk, and they're trying to make money. That's their thing, is bottom line, make money. So you leave it up to independent filmmakers are the only ones taking a chance and doing interesting, new, or original stuff anymore.
Yeah, but that's kind of always how it's been. You know, and it's not only movie, it's any medium, music, books, etc.
It's gotten much worse, though,
it's in the so last mainstream. 20 years. But it has gotten worse, but at the same time, I feel like it is easier for people to make movies on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not with the budget, but because of the technology and the software that anyone can get now. Look, we're making a podcast. We have a microphone and a computer.
And a squeaky monkey.
And a squeaky monkey. And we're able to do this. Whereas, you know, 10 right. years ago, that wasn't happening.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of become easier, I feel. Mm-hmm. But there are so many, the movie studios are so powerful right now that you're not going to get it on the big screen. But you are going to be able to
get
it
out. And it's this, you go back and you look, and it's the same thing that happens. In the 60s and 50s and 60s, the Bolex came out, and that all of a sudden people could afford to get a camera and make films. And so people sort of did because they wanted to make their own films. In the 70s and 80s, you know, VHS came out and camcorders. And then you got people like Todd Sheets who's like, now I can make my own movie. I don't have to wait for Hollywood to maybe get off their ass and make something interesting. I can make my own. Then we have digital out there. Now people mm-hmm. can make their own digital films out there.
Edited at home on their home computer.
It's technology is the great leveler, and that's been mm-hmm. one of the great blessings of that. And every time there is a technological advance, there is a consistent following of flowering of new movies from people and other things as well, other mm-hmm. other artistic mediums as well. Yeah. And it's great. And I'm very thankful for it, and that's why I try to support it. On the other hand, not every artistic, accomplishment is a home run. And sometimes you get these absurd little gobblers, and that's kind of what I'm interested in. That's what I love. I don't really necessarily like the big, great, grandiose, achievements that are out there. I kind of like the little engines that could, but failed.
I like how you had to tack that on the end, but failed.
But failed.
Good.
But failed. Yeah, it's just, intentions are the other thing, too. That's another thing. A lot of Hollywood movies, they don't really care about quality. They're caring about money. Mm-hmm. And that's not really the case for most indies. Most indie folks, especially when I told you, I have to show you American Movie someday. That's sort of an indie guy making the movie he's been dying to make, and that's all he wants to do in his life is make this movie. And he finally does, and you're sort of seeing it happen. That's really all he wants to do is make this movie. It doesn't really matter how good it is or how acceptable it is. Of course, if it becomes a big hit, he'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
But just to make the movie in and of itself is an achievable dream that, you know, he can do. And so he wants to do. And so that's the odyssey. That's the journey that he goes on. And it's very, very cool. It's very interesting. You don't get that with a lot of Hollywood movies because it's just like, oh, we're going to bankroll something. This looks like it makes money. Let's just throw money at this, and let's make sure we get a deal so we can get toys so that the kids will spend more money on this, and blah, 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 blah. And it's so soulless. I just, it just repels me. I could watch Prehistoric Bimbos and Armageddon City over and over and over because, to me, this movie, while it may not have achieved its original goals, entertains me on a level that a lot of Hollywood movies just do not. I always look at a movie. To me, the ultimate boring, mediocre Hollywood movie was a movie called Tequila Sunrise. Did you ever see that one?
Did not.
You might have, and you never would have noticed.
Oh. It's,
I literally went to the theater. It was a Mel Gibson movie, and at the time he was still big, and mm-hmm. I forget who else was in there. And I literally came out of that movie. And in 5 minutes, I had no idea what it was. I'd forgotten everything. It was mm-hmm. so forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just by the numbers, no heart in it, no soul in it, nothing. It was just a non-experience. And to me, it was emblematic of where Hollywood was going. And it really, really turned me off. You're not going to get that with this. Todd Sheets may not have done this movie very well, but he's trying. He's really, really trying. They're all trying. All of these actors are trying their best, and they're not in it for the money. They may have been. It would have been nice, but they're just to craft the movie in and of itself is a lofty goal. There's mm-hmm. a level of art in this. I know that sounds weird to say, but it's true. There's a level of artistry in this movie that is lacking in a lot of Hollywood films.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I love a movie like this and why I like to show it. And in addition to the fact that it's very, very humorous and very strange and surreal.
Yep.
So I'm very curious how you see this film compared to some of the others that we have seen so far in Indie Film Cafe.
I think it's one of the worst. Yep, it is. It ranks right there with Suburban Sasquatch. It'd get a higher rating if, as I said before, this was done by high school kids. But, yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I think at one point I said, so, Roller Gator's looking pretty good right about now.
There were, actually, during the roller skating scene, that popped into mind. I was like, huh, Roller Gator was more exciting than this robot roller skating, not roller skating, skateboarding, worse than I would skateboard. I'm pretty bad. Oh, yeah. It was bad. Overacting, all of that.
But as far as, okay, yes, it was technically a bad film in every possible way.
Oh, yeah.
But as an entertainment piece, did it entertain you?
Yeah. I thought it had its moments.
I know there were times you wanted to laugh.
I did laugh.
Yes.
I did laugh several times. I enjoyed it. I probably wouldn't watch it all the time. Like, you once was really good enough for me. Yes, it did remind me way, way back in my college days. I dated a guy who was into filmmaking, and he made a little teaser short thing, and very much reminded me of that.
Nice.
I was not in it. I only made the tutu.
As you should.
Yes.
So we got to get Moody in the tutu. I think that'd be funny.
Oh, God.
But just to get back to what we were saying, it was entertaining. It may not have been entertaining for the reasons that it wanted to be, but the point is, it wasn't boring. And I've always stood by the statement that the cardinal sin of movie making is to make a boring film. That was Tequila Sunrise. It was a very boring, event. It was dull.
I haven't seen that, but I tried to watch the movie Ronin, and I actually have no friends that really like it. That bored me to tears. I actually stopped it, and I'm one of those people that likes to complete something, whether it's a series, a movie, a book, whatever. Even if I hate it, I tried to finish it. And this one, I stopped halfway through. I was like, I don't know what happened. I don't care what's going to happen.
Exactly.
I think I returned it to Blockbuster.
Right. And that's it. You don't care because, frankly, they didn't care. Mm-hmm. And it comes through in the film. I remember seeing that too. And I'm thinking, Robert De Niro has come to this? Really? Yeah.
It was just boring.
Right. This is not a boring film. Okay, there may be some boring stretches in it. I grant you that. Mm-hmm. But there is just so much odd, surreal stuff going on that it's really tough to be bored. I mean, there's so many details. One of the reasons I watch this movie over and over is because I find new stuff that I find fascinating. And, you know, okay, I'm a little bit obsessive compulsive about some things, maybe, especially
you
movies.
Think?
Just a little bit. I enjoy it, and I thought it was fun. So I guess we're sort of at the time where we should talk about the score.
Yes. Right?
So I have already scored this particular film.
Okay.
And as has Mr. Moody. So
Mr. Moody. Oh.
So one of the reasons we wanted to...
Even as a stuffed cat?
Yeah.
Or something
there? You go. I'm telling you.
Why is there... we forgot to mention the landscaping here in Armageddon City in this dystopian future is very well done.
Yes,
it is. They pay their landscapers well. But there's a... Is it stuffed? Is it stone? Cat?
A lion? I don't know what that is.
I don't know.
Maybe it's like a garden thing.
It's not a gnome.
No, it's not a gnome.
Okay.
But this is what I'm talking about. You get these funny little details that you can watch over and over again. It'll pop out and you're like, what? It's wonderful.
Okay, rating.
But one of the reasons why we wanted you to watch this is so that you could give your rating so that we could go ahead and add that to our ratings. And then all the other movies that are on the show, we can finally compare and we can finally sort of get to the movie that we decided was the worst on the stinkometer. Which one was the best? So.
Okay.
1 to 10, with 10 being really stinky and 1 being not stinky at all. Where would you place this film? You want to see some of your scores? What?
Yes, because in my head, I am comparing it to Suburban Sasquatch, because to me, that's what it's on the... To me, that it's on the same level as that.
Well, let's see here. So the highest score you've given so far, you gave an 8 to Roller Gator.
Oh.
Yes, you did. You gave a 7 to Bigfoot Wars. You gave a 7 to Suburban Sasquatch. You gave an 8 to the Roller Gator. So here's the thing. Is this worse than Roller Gator?
No, I would say it's better than Roller. I found it more entertaining than Roller Gator.
Okay.
So I would say 7.5.
Okay, 7.5. That's a good score. You're better at it than we do. I gave it a 9.
Okay.
And Moody gave it an 8.
Oh, see, now I'm thinking.
Okay, we can erase that score if you want to adjust. It's clearly...
I think I want to move it to an 8.
Are you sure?
Cause and
we could rewatch it so that you could get a better score idea.
That's okay. It's going on in the background. There's no need for a third watch for me. Yeah, let me move it to an 8.
Okay.
There were continuity issues. There's a lot of filming issues. The acting was horrible. But it did have some nice scenes in it. It actually had a story.
Yes.
Ish.
It did.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not very complicated, but it had one, and we were able to encapsulate it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it did have, you know, some quirkiness.
Definitely.
So, yeah, I think.
And it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
It was definitely kind of fun. One thing I'm not going to do in this show that we do is to bring forth any boring movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, I might bring in one somewhere along the line just to sort of give you guys a baseline. Like, I might bring in The Terror, or I might bring in something like, I don't know. There are a number of movies out there that are just... unwatchable. They're so boring, and that's generally not something we want to do.
Okay.
And of course, the other thing is we want to be able to get folks to be out and watch movies. Yeah. That's the other reason why we're doing this, because we want Todd Sheets movies to be seen by people. We want Dave Waskovich movies to be seen by people. So I don't necessarily want really boring movies out there to promote them, because they're boring.
Mm-hmm.
Who the heck wants that? Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
So I would much rather promote a movie like this, which may not have been very well made, but it was a lot of fun, and it's got a wacky sense of humor, and I don't know. I just think everybody should check it out at least once. Nothing else like it. Okay. So I think that about wraps it up for this week's Indie Film Cafe. Mm-hmm. Normally, this is around the time when we start talking about making sure you go to our Patreon page. We're on Facebook. Are we on Twitter? I don't remember anymore. Do we tweet?
I don't know. Jonathan's in charge of that.
That's true. That's never a good sign.
Are we on Instagram?
I don't know that we do a whole lot on Instagram.
Doesn't matter. We're on there.
Yeah. We do have our main page. That is indiefilmcafe.reviews. That's the one that is the sort of gateway to all of our other sites, including our YouTube page.
Mm-hmm.
We have our Stinky Movie Scoreboard. That's where we're getting all the ratings from, so that people can sort of follow along. I'm at the point now where Tina the Hopping Monkey, who is the person who runs our website for us, is going to change it a little bit so that we can actually get the totals and not just the individual scores, so that at the end of our first season, we can total them up and see which is the highest score and which has the lowest score. So that'll be kind of fun. And then Jonathan Moody has his site. You know, we're all part of Sick Flick Productions now. So you can go there and find out what that's all about. I have my Moo Cow movie reviews there. You have your cooking blog there.
Yes, which I apologize. I have not updated in a couple weeks as I've been busy.
It is okay.
But I have made goodies. I just haven't posted them.
Very good.
Some delicious Mm-hmm. Goodies too.
Absolutely. I did like the banana thing that you made.
Mm,
that
banana cake. Yes. I liked it better than banana bread.
And, you know, I wanted to say it sort of came and vanished. I got a piece and then the rest was gone. Like, wow, the plague of locusts came and wiped it out.
Yep.
Because I was kind of looking for a second slice and I never got it.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm trying to think of what I'm doing next. I'm making a raisin cookie with pineapple.
Interesting.
Yes. The amount of pineapple in it is very small, so it makes me think it's just for moisture.
I see.
But, yeah, cookies are nice.
People love that word.
I know.
And raisins. People love raisins.
Okay.
No, they don't.
I was going to say, no. What's it? One of the great curses is may all your chocolate chip cookies be raisins.
I know. That's so awful.
Yep.
But anyway, so we have a number of different things there. Just Jen's cooking blog is one of the fun ones. And come check us out. And at some point, we're hoping to get back to Firehouse Coffee and maybe get to do another live event. If and when that happens, we will let you know if we end up getting invited or allowed to do an event elsewhere. We will also let you know. Mm-hmm. We are still doing some movie reviews on YouTube. We're still doing unboxings. We are still doing trolling for stinkers. And I think Jonathan, I don't know if you remember, but I think Jonathan mentioned in the last video that he'd like to start adding some skits into some of our videos and some of our podcasts, which is kind of a fun idea.
You guys have fun with that.
Everybody wants to see and hear Just Jen. Just, you have to let her know.
You can, I have a picture on the website and my voice is over the podcast. And there you go.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. In any event, there's lots of stuff out there. Please come and visit us and stay tuned for next time on Indie Film Cafe. We will see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Let me try that again.
You guys right here, I'm going to ambush those robots and save the Bimbo.